Good morning, everyone. I'm excited to tell you about our paper titled Mobile Money, Mobile Problems, Security Analysis of Branchless Banking in the Developing World. This is work done by me and several other co-authors at the University of Florida, Nolan Scaife, Adam Bates, Patrick Trainer, and Kevin Butler. So to start off, I want to start off with a story, and the story begins all the way back in 1995. Some of you remember 1995, I hope. But at the time, there was this thing, it was becoming kind of a big deal called the internet. And the internet was going to revolutionize everything from publishing to commerce, and it was even going to revolutionize how we pay for things. So there were a lot of articles around this time about the future of money, and things like e-cash and digicash. Now, if you fast forward about 10 years later, we expected to live in a cashless society, at least in the developed world. And it turns out we did. By the time I started college, nobody was carrying cash anymore. But they weren't using these newfangled digital currencies. It was just a simple credit or debit card. But about the same time in Kenya, so this is around 2006, the mobile phone revolution had taken hold. And phones there were cheap and ubiquitous, and everybody had one. Now, these phone systems that you didn't have a monthly bill, they were prepaid, and you'd go to the local store, buy airtime, and top up. But if you didn't have airtime, you couldn't receive calls. So the network engineers solved this problem. They built a little system where you could push a button on your feature phone, and you could send airtime to a friend. And presumably, this was so you could call them when they were out of money. But what happened was, because airtime had basically a fixed price, it became a medium of exchange. So if you were short a few shillings when you were going to buy groceries, you could just send the tiller some airtime to make up the difference in price. The folks at Vodafone started looking at this. They noticed it was happening, and realized that in their hands, they had the problem, the ability to solve one of the most pervasive problems in the developing world, and that is that almost no one has access to basic banking services. Here in the U.S. in particular, we take it for granted that there's a branch on every corner, we have debit cards in our pockets, it's easy to deposit and withdraw money, but in Kenya, that wasn't the case. There were fairly few branches, and most folks didn't have enough to make a minimum deposit. So what Vodafone did was they took the system, they took their phone networks, they built a system that they called M-Pesa. And what M-Pesa does is allow you to go to where you top up your airtime and make deposits and withdrawals in the system. And then you make payments and balance inquiries from your feature phone, like you see here. And this was revolutionary because it required almost no new equipment. All you had to do was give the retailers a mobile phone. Everyone could use the mobile phone that they already had. And it became so big that they processed 30% of GDP annually in Kenya with this system. The potential wasn't just in Kenya, though. And the model that M-Pesa pioneered has spread like wildfire throughout the developing world. At the time we wrote this paper, there were 261 systems in 88 countries, all trying to be the next M-Pesa. And so this map behind me shows a heat map of where these systems are being deployed. And you can see it's nearly everywhere except the most developed regions. So we noticed that these systems were starting to move into smartphones. Just as mobile phones had become cheaper, smartphones are becoming more and more affordable. And so there's an opportunity here to add new features to the system, but to also to roll these out in a more secure manner than the feature phones had the capabilities to provide. And so we wanted to see if the promise that moving to smartphones could make these systems actually more secure, and we wanted to see if these systems were secure at all. And so we'll tell you about how we answered that question, but I want to just harp a little bit more on why we think this is so important. Millions every day are relying on these mobile money systems. They are becoming the infrastructure for the developing world, and they are continuing to grow by leaps and bounds every day. In this study, we actually looked at all available 46 Android apps for mobile money systems. And we didn't just focus on the application security. We also looked at how they were doing things server-side. But I think the most interesting result will come at the end of this talk, where we talk about the policy environment surrounding these systems and what policy and regulation is going to mean moving forward. Beyond an automated analysis of the all 46 apps, we did a deep dive into 7 of them and exposed a number of problematic security practices. So let me start off by telling you about the automated analysis we did. And we wanted to start off and get just a base level ground sense of, are these apps doing security things properly? And so our proxy for this was a neat little tool by Sasha Fall and some others in Germany called Malodroid. And what it does is it statically analyzes Android apps to look for TLS problems, so things like problematic certificate validation. The map below shows the locations of all the apps that we analyzed. The big black stars are the apps we analyzed in detail. So we analyzed these apps with Malodroid, and we found that over 50% of them had a critical TLS vulnerability. Now, this is static analysis, and as we all know, static analysis is not perfect, but it does give a good indicator. And when we did our teardowns, we found that there were some false positives and some false negatives. So this doesn't give a complete picture of application security overall, and there's still work to be done here. But we did view this as a strong signal that all was not right with the security of these apps. And the reason for that comes from the Malodroid paper itself. They looked at, I think, 13,000 applications, and only 9.3 of those had statically identifiable problems. And by contrast, I told you we saw 50%. So if you're a mobile money app, you're 5 times more likely than average to implement TLS problematically. This is not what we want to see from the banking infrastructure for millions worldwide. So we went from here, and we realized that we, to get a complete, a good picture, we were going to have to analyze some apps in depth. So we took 7 very popular apps, and we considered download count and location in our selection of these. And I'll show you more about the apps in a minute. But they represent over 1.3 million users. And as we took a look at these apps, we focused on just the essentials. These are the things that you have to get right for a banking system. And they were registration and login, user authentication after login, and money transfers. In other words, can you do the most critical things in a secure manner? So these are the apps we selected: GCash, Zoom, Mcoin, Money on Mobile, Mpay, Airtel Money, and Oxygen Wallet. 3 were in India because there's a large user base for these systems there. Another 3 were in other countries in Southeast Asia, and Zoom was located in Brazil. So at a high level, from our teardown, we found that 6 out of 7 apps had easily exploited critical vulnerabilities. This isn't leaking an IMEI number. This is stealing credentials, payment history, fabricating or modifying transactions. In 6 of these systems, we were confident that if we wanted to, we could steal money. Again, not what we wanted to see. In total, we found 28 vulnerabilities in 6 of 7 of the apps, and we covered 13 categories in the common weakness enumeration, which is a standardized taxonomy for security vulnerabilities. This was really useful because we cover all of these vulnerabilities in depth in the paper, and the CWE gave us a means to systematize them. Looking at the number of vulnerabilities per app, we see that that some apps have more vulnerabilities than others, but all but Zoom had at least 1 critical vulnerability. We like to think of Zoom as our beacon of hope. This is an interesting system because it was the only South American system we analyzed, and it was actually developed in partnership with MasterCard. But the others we found problems with. We broke our CWE findings into 4 basic trends, just to make it easier to think about and to reason about. The first category is 1 vulnerability, and it stands on its own, and that is certificate validation. 4 apps failed to validate certificates properly. We also found 6 instances in 4 apps of what's called non-standard cryptography. And by non-standard cryptography, we mean anything from poor randomness in key generation all the way to flawed implementations of novel protocols that they tried to develop for these apps. We also found problems with access control, 7 vulnerabilities in 4 apps, and information leakage vulnerabilities in 5 apps. And by information leakage, we mean anything from insecure credential storage on the device all the way up to failure to use cryptography at all for payment transactions. So I want to take you through some of these categories one by one and show you some of the biggest examples that we saw in these apps. And we're going to start with TLS on the client side. Now, something you should know if you don't already about Android is that it correctly validates TLS certificates by default, which is nice because as a developer, all you have to do is point your app to an HTTPS web service and Android takes care of the rest. It's, from my perspective, it's actually very well designed. So when we say that 4 of 7 apps had TLS problems, it means they actually overrode the secure defaults in Android. So this wasn't an instance of developers not understanding an obscure library call that caused the validation to break. They intentionally, but perhaps unknowingly, destroyed the security of their apps by overriding these validation routines. So looking at how these apps were used, we suspect that much of it had to do with silencing certificate warnings during development or deployment. You're building an app, you point it at HTTPS, and you get a certificate warning, and so you go to Stack Overflow and see how to fix it. And they tell you the wrong thing. More of this is informed by actually looking at what happens on the server side. So we looked at the endpoints for these 7 apps and requested a Qualys SSL test score. And we found that about half the apps were doing okay, but three of the apps had terrible TLS configurations. 2 of them received an F from Qualys for supporting SSL2 and being vulnerable to other attacks. But Mcoin was actually probably the most egregious. Now, we couldn't get a Qualys score for it because it pointed at an IP address, and Qualys doesn't want to be in MAP for the world. But their certificate was first expired by years, self-signed, and issued to localhost. So what this means is that Mcoin, if they wanted their system to work, if the developers, you got to ship now, the only way to do it was to break TLS validation. And as we all understand, that has significant and terrible implications for the security of this app. So from TLS, I want to show you some instances of what we call non-standard cryptography, or as I like to call it, DIY, do-it-yourself cryptography. Now, if you've ever taken a security class, as most of you have, or if you've taught a security class, as probably most of you have, one of the things you tell your students is you never build your own crypto. But the developers of these apps didn't take that lesson to heart. So I want to show you key generation in Airtel Money. It's a static string combined with the phone number and the account number. Now this key is used for application level security. So this is actually a sign that they were thinking about security and that they were trying to implement a defense in depth approach. So this key, they only use it to encrypt the user PIN and to authenticate with the service. So this key is only used in one place. But the problem is, all of these fields are available in previous messages that were present in broken TLS messages. So because they broke TLS, their defense in depth didn't work because they had bad key generation. And because the validation was disabled, we could man in the middle and completely own this account. We now have all of the login credentials. I want to show you another example from Oxygen Wallet. And it also starts with bad key generation. So we take 17 bits from random.random, which, by the way, the specs say you should never, ever use this for crypto. And you combine it with the phone number, the date, and then you pad out with zeros. because I assume it's because they weren't sure how long the date field might be or something. It gets worse from here because they generate this key client side using the random number generator on the client, and then they encrypt the message that they use to register a user with this key. Now, at this point in the protocol, the developers had probably already written this code, but they realized they have a problem, and the problem is that the server does not have the key. So they solve this problem. Thankfully, they don't put the key in the message. Instead, they put it in an HTTP header field. Thankfully, the one thing they did right was they didn't name the header field encryption key. It wasn't obvious what this was until you look at the code and you realize that this is what's happening. So finally, they send the message to the registration server. When you find these things in apps, your jaw sort of drops and you think, could they really have done this? It's scary that tens of thousands of people are relying on this app for their banking. I wanted to move on now to the worst example that we saw in the do-it-yourself crypto category. I don't think so. Your mileage may vary. The question from the front was this one. Those weren't the worst. So this is in Money on Mobile, and I want to show you how they implemented cryptography. All messages are sent over plain text HTTP. So keep that in mind as you see the following protocol. We have a registration message that we have on our user's device, and we need to encrypt it. But for some reason, I'm not sure if they had trouble understanding the Android crypto documents or what, but they felt like the best way to do this was to take the user data and a static key embedded in the application and then send it to a separate web service over plain text for encryption. So that's message one in the protocol. Message two and three are the response coming back to the encryption from the encryption server, unauthenticated, and then forwarded to the registration server. What's interesting about these protocols, though, are that it's clear that they had some idea that they needed security, right? They knew they needed crypto, but they may not have had the tools at the time to know what the best decision was to make. The real kicker with this example, though, is this is the only crypto used in this application. And I told you this was only for registration messages. Once you're actually sending payment requests or getting balance inquiries, these are never encrypted. They're sent in the clear with no integrity or confidentiality protection. I also want to show you some examples from the poor authentication category. Oxygen Wallet allows a password reset with an unauthenticated SMS sent from the user's phone. So if I'm an Oxygen Wallet user and I leave my phone on the table while I step away from the table at a restaurant, say, anyone can walk up, send a predefined message to the Oxygen Wallet service, get a new password, and because they're already holding my banking device in their hands, they can transfer all of the money out of my account. They could probably do this in the amount of time it takes someone to go to the bathroom. This is one error that we pointed out to them. Money on Mobile, again, is worse, though. Money on Mobile only checked the user PIN to move between screens in the application. The server actually did nothing to authenticate the users in any sensitive call. So if you send a payment request, not only is it not encrypted or integrity protected, it's actually not even authenticated. So there's no PIN or anything. It's just a user to from username and the amount. So having found this stuff, we knew we had to reach out to the companies and tell them about these problems and get them to fix them. So we sent all six companies messages with critical vulnerabilities. None of them had established security disclosure practices, and we spent a lot of time trying to get in touch with these companies. Only two responded to our messages. Oxygen's response was, we knew there are problems, and don't worry, guys, we're working on it. Our first message did not include our report because we wanted to see if they wanted to receive it in an encrypted format or in some other secure exchange. We tried, right? They actually weren't interested in it all. We sent our report anyway so that they could make sure that they weren't repeating mistakes they may not have realized. Money on Mobile, on the other hand, we sent the report to the email address they specified after speaking to a user in their support chat, and they said they'll get back to us. They didn't actually get back to us. But it turns out that as a result of some press that this paper has gotten in the Wall Street Journal, they did tell the reporter who was interviewing them that they have released a new product as of a couple of weeks ago that they claim addresses the security concerns that we saw in the former app. And they promised that they're sunsetting their vulnerable app this week. The app that was vulnerable is still present in the Google Market. You can still install it. We went and checked it. They didn't fix any of the security problems. It did have a significantly redesigned user interface, though. And that really upset us, because what it meant was that they'd still made development changes to this app without addressing even the most rudimentary security problems. Hopefully their new app is better. We haven't had a chance to analyze it yet. So I think I've made the case that there are a lot of security problems in this space. But I think that the worst part of this talk is actually coming, and that is what happens when these apps are actually compromised. So the attacks against these apps are going to be fairly simple. And so we went and looked at the terms of service to see who bears liability. In the United States and most other developed world countries, it's the banks that bear the liability for fraud. Even if somehow you accidentally leak your credit card number or whatever, you're not liable for any fraudulent charges above some nominal amount. When your credit card number gets stolen, you're grouchy and you're inconvenienced, but you don't lose your life savings. The terms of service of every one of these applications state that the user is unequivocally responsible for all authenticated transactions, even if the credentials were stolen due to technical malfeasance on their part. They didn't put that part in because they assumed that their applications were secure, and the only way that fraud could occur is if you accidentally divulged your password or your PIN. And so the ultimate result of this is that when these systems are attacked, it's the user who's bearing the liability. And this is critical because these apps, while they're still very much growing, they're not established. If somebody were to publish a paper today on the problems with the credit card infrastructure, we're all locked in. We're not really going to change. I know people have worked on that. On the other hand, these systems are still gaining trust among their users. And if people get this idea that these systems will be regularly subjected to fraud and they lose everything, no one is going to touch these. And the lofty goals that these companies and NGOs have for financial inclusion go out the door. Speaking of NGOs and especially governments, let's talk about regulation for a second. So with the credit card industry, you have the PCI standards. So there's some industry self-regulation going on. Banks are heavily regulated here in the United States. They're also regulated in many of the countries where these systems are developed. So when these systems started to roll out, many countries actually had to modify their anti-money laundering laws to make it easy for users to sign up for these applications. So you don't have to present a passport and 15 other documents to get an account with these things. You just enter a username and password and go. But the problem is only one country has addressed regulating the computer security issues with these apps. And that country is India. But the regulation consists of a one-page illustrative framework for data and communication security. You have a one-page of guidance that doesn't carry regulatory enforcement in any way. It's actually an appendix and a memo, but we did find it. And I want to point out, too, that we went and actually read these guidelines, and Oxygen Wallet and Airtel Money both fell within the letter, although possibly not the spirit of these guidelines. So they were using cryptography. I showed you Airtel had was encrypting their PIN separately, and that was actually one of the recommendations in this guideline. So I want to jump to the takeaways real quick. And tell you that mobile money is revolutionizing finance in the developing world. This is an awesome, awesome thing. But the initial deployment, at least on smartphones, is a security disaster. And the poor security of these apps combined with these terrible liability models that put all of the problems on the user are going to threaten the future of these systems. Now, best practices may help, but we discovered along the way that the best practice, that the state of the art for auditing a space of apps like this and figuring out if problems are present in these apps still has a long way to go. So there's plenty of work still to do in mobile money. And with that, I want to thank you, and I'm ready for questions.
Jay Han Jung, Microsoft Research.
Hi.
Thank you. It's very eye-opening findings. So my question is about some of the behaviors that you might have observed.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, those financial applications, because you know, apps on mobile phone cannot protect themselves so much if the platform is rooted. You know, so I was wondering whether those apps that you analyzed, you know, they've done, have you seen that they do anything to check whether the platform is rooted or do some kind of app integrity check or anything like that?
So the question is, are these apps aware that the platform that they're on may be rooted and in fact compromised? We saw no evidence that any app was checking for that. And moreover, it seems that most apps weren't aware of the security model. And that was some of the vulnerabilities that I didn't get a chance to talk about, was there was a lot of security critical information leaking in system logs, just as one example. So they're not secure in that threat model at all, the okay. ones we looked at anyway.
All right, thank you.
Nick Nikiforakis, Stony Brook University. Thank you for your talk. So I wanted to ask if you could elaborate a bit on your findings and how they compare to non-banking apps. So did the things you find, like, are they specific to mobile banking, or are the problems that are really there in every app and they're just more serious because they're in the mobile apps?
So we didn't do a comprehensive study like we did for these apps on standard banking apps.
That wasn't my question, sorry, I wasn't clear. So if, are your findings different than findings for generic apps, non-banking apps.
So actually, so the one data point I do have is the automated analysis I discussed at the beginning, generic, basically non-banking apps, which is almost all of the data set that the Maladroit folks looked at, saw an incidence of about 9% for TLS problems, and we saw an incidence of 50%. Now we suspect that these sorts of problems are going to occur in all apps, mm-hmm. but it's especially troubling that banking infrastructure is seeing
right.
these.
Was there something that you saw that no one else has seen before?
In terms of application security? Well, I think some of the crypto architectures were quite novel. Apart from that, it seems like a failure of making it easy and possible to build secure apps and to know when they are and are not secure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's thank our speaker again.